Welcome to episode number 48, Winning versus Losing.
This is the Rotated Views Podcast with Jimmy Lee and the crew, giving you life from various perspectives. Welcome to our level. We hope you enjoy the views.
You are now tuned in to the Rotated Views Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Lee Velez. I'm here with Goose, yep. Heck, Manny, yep, yep. And Gabe. Chilling. Once again, folks, wow, we're really pulling this through here. This is episode number 48, and we still got a full house, guys. 48. Pretty exciting stuff.
48.
Winning versus losing. In this episode, we discuss the key differences between winning and losing. We talk about what second place means, participation trophies, how we celebrate our wins, how we process our losses, and our advice to someone not accomplishing a long-term goal. We wrap the episode up with quotes from Billie Jean King and Vince Lombardi. All right, so if you're new, thank you for joining us. Don't forget to download and subscribe. We drop a new episode every Tuesday morning for your listening pleasure. And as usual, we kick things off with a two definitions, this time from dictionary.com. They define the words winning and losing. So for the first one, winning, they define it as Charlie Sheen. Just kidding. They define it as that wins, successful or victorious, as in a contest. Losing, they define it as causing or suffering loss. Right, so with that being said, we will move on to a short story to kick this off from PositivePerformance.com. Alex Westland starts anew with fresh losses. So these guys, this website gave a bunch of obviously winning versus losing stories, and it kind of broke some things down for real life examples from highly professional athletes, the elite of. And how they dealt with the failure. So Alex Westland starts anew with fresh losses. When the hockey goalie ended his stunning career at Yale, he was used to winning. So when he started with a new team in the 99-2000 season after his graduation, losing had an even icier bite. But the All-American took the losses with stride, saying, "To a certain extent, you have to let losing bother you. It's the only way that you can use it to affect you in a positive way in future games. In any situation, win or lose, it's important to analyze what went well or what went poorly." Basically, if you want that even more broken down, listen to episode number 47, Man in the Mirror. We actually do talk about reflection. We brush up against winning versus losing, which is why we wanted to, explore this topic a little bit more this week. And the second story I have is Dan Gable's Necessary Failure. Again, this is from PositivePerformance.com. And they go, and the story goes like this. Now considered the most famous wrestler and most decorated coach in the history of the sport, Dan Gable was the god from Iowa State. Fighting to keep his title in the 1978 NCAA Wrestling National Championships. As such, everyone expected him to win, and he did, until a nobody sophomore from the University of Washington by the name of Larry Owings pulled the rug out from under him. Gable admits he got greedy, that his ego stepped in when his mind should have been in control. He also admits that he sprang back from the Owings match stronger and more determined than ever. Of that crushing disappointment, he says, "I wouldn't have become a great wrestler and such a great coach, a legend in the sport, without that match." Fascinating stuff. Yeah. What do you guys think about both of those stories? The first one with Westland and the second one with Gable.
They come from two different perspectives. Gable was already a winner. And I'll put that in quotes.
Yeah.
But, he took it to a whole nother level of greatness. So there's levels of winning, no doubt. And Gable is probably a perfect example of what it is. And, the first story kind of touches on, how kind of the thought process, in winning and losing. Right?
Alex Westland also, that was his whole thing. I'll say he was used to winning. And in the 99-2000 season, he just started losing. But
right, but he went to another team. And that's when...
Started losing,
yeah.
Yeah, but he was used to winning.
Right.
Have you ever been in that situation where you for sure thought you were going to bag a win, like, and you're completely confident, you're not even, and that has nothing to do with sports, or can, but it doesn't have to do with the old sports, where you're just like, oh, I got this, blah, 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 and totally the rug got pulled from underneath you and you just fell flat on your face?
Yeah. Well, it was, I guess you could say I was playing something. I bought 3 scratch-offs, right? So the one I got, and the way I read the instructions was completely wrong, but I read it, I started scratching, I go to the gas station, I was like, yo, I just want $100, and I tell the gas attendant in Jersey, they pump your gas for you, so I'm telling him, like, yo, I think I want $100, and I show him my card, he's like, yeah, you definitely won $100, and I'm like super excited, and I'm like, yeah, this is perfect, we're going away, this is like extra money. I go to the set to cash in, it says loser. I was like, oh man, dude, I walked away so angry.
So you read the scratch off incorrectly.
Correct. So it was my fault to begin with.
Yeah.
I should have read it properly. But I got so hyped that I started, I'm like, yeah, this is going to
be perfect. You already had that spent, too.
I had it spent. I had no money left over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was definitely one. And that was just recent. Last fall. No, it was...
Last night.
No, it was September.
September.
Yeah.
When we're going down to the shore?
Down the shore.
Okay. Yeah,
sure.
Manny, what was yours?
My first annual planning meeting at my current job. Walked in there very confident. First time the CEO was going to come down. It's a smaller business, so the CEO, you know, comes down, and I just had all the confidence in the world. Like I knew what I was doing, man. I knew how to get the message across, what I was going to do to change everything. And I walked in. I was asked one question about, you know, what my expenses were to, you know, against my revenue, like how much, you know, what were the percentage? And I was like, oh, deer in headlights, nothing.
He's like, man.
Thought you'd know that. I was like, done. I was done. Completely deflated.
Your confidence went down.
Everything I thought I knew or was going to say was completely shot. I just didn't. I just took notes the whole time. Just writing doodling.
Oh, he took notes.
It was supposed to
be giving numbers.
Right, he was going to hand out books when he got there.
I set the bar really high.
He only brought the pen just to sign signatures. Yeah. Yeah. Autographs.
I mean, going into it, that's how confident I was.
Oh, man,
one question, great. I was so fragile at that point. I was like, oh my God, I got so much to learn. So.
Oh man, that's funny. I had a situation where I was super confident in presenting a home-based business. And this one guy in the back of my mind was like an absolute beast. I'm like, oh, we got this. This is like, this guy should, I'm so shocked that he, you know, never even seen this. And to make it worse, I wasn't like talking like trash, but I was hyping this whole meeting up so much to, you know, the person who was going to whatever introduce this concept to my whale, so to speak. And this guy's like, wow, like I'm almost about to just leave and let you do it just because I can just be home when I live like 2.5 hours away from here. And I'm like, okay, I thought that was like weird or whatever. I'm like, dude, I'm telling you, no, it's going to be worth your drive. I promise you, this is awesome. Man, this dude, they explained the business. This dude got up and walked out in the middle of a presentation.
What?
And just left. Like, never showed up ever. Never, like, just.
Never came back.
And so the guy who gave the presentation just staring at me. He's like, this was worth the drive. Like, kind of like, oh, it was hysterical.
Wow.
But I remember being so confident that this person would agree with me that this was a great idea.
Yeah.
To the point where I was basically trash talking. I really wasn't. I was just confident. But it was funny. I took a huge L that day. And I remember never being that excited for anyone ever again. No, this was even
so,
before
so you
I
made
even...
this guy, you convinced this guy to come out 2 hours away?
No. He's already coming out. When they come out that far, they have multiple things set up. I was just one of them. But I was like, I think the first one. So I was like, oh, he's going to, you know, kick things off. I was like talking a little too much. So luckily he ended up, you know, squaring off with a couple other people and landing a couple deals. But man, I thought, and that was it. I only had the one planned. So that was it. That was the end of my day. I went, it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I was done. I was like, all right. I'm just going to go to the library now and go study. I didn't even know what to do. It was awful. I was brutal. No, actually, I started taking notes with the guy giving the presentation.
So I guess that's what you do when you get kind of like put in that situation. You just take notes. So yeah. I should have taken notes when I lost the lottery.
Yeah.
Take notes.
You should have started to take notes, read better instruction.
Were you guys ever on like a winning team and you just felt like you were always like no matter what, like in sports or something? Like, I remember I felt like there was like an era. There was always like an era, like in high school or whatever. Like there was always, we played against a team or we might have been a team that was always like, who was like the team that always won?
Us, our senior year.
Yeah. Our senior year. We won like district one.
Yeah. Every time we walked on the field, I felt like we were going to win. Like, yeah. Beat us.
It was very, yeah. We had a high level of confidence for being such a small little town, which is actually hilarious when you think about like the overall picture.
Yeah.
But we had every, I guess, like backing to be that confident. We did. Sure. We were good.
Yeah, we were good.
But it was just funny saying like we thought we were way better. I think we thought we were way better than what we actually were. I think we were really good. I don't think that's such a bad thing. It was just funny because I'm like, if we really played like other teams from outside the state or outside.
No, we did. Our senior year, we went down to Florida.
Yeah.
And we played a couple teams that were nationally ranked. And we held on to a team from Alabama for like four innings. We were in the game. We were down like 2-1. And then I think I came in and pitched, and it just got out of hand after that. We got our butts kicked after that. Yeah.
Yes.
And then we played another team, and we got pretty beat. We got beat pretty bad. And then finally, the last one was another Pennsylvania team that we held on. So, yeah, outside of the school, we weren't a national champion.
The one game that you guys lost, though, didn't you guys play two games in that day?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was there. Yeah. It was awesome.
Pop with you guys. Yeah.
We went down. Yeah, we drove down.
I had my Nextel.
They were grown men, though, mind you.
They were grown men.
They're the same age, but they were grown men.
No, they were like, they were built different.
Yeah,
like,
well, that's the southern statures.
Maybe.
I don't believe that.
No, I don't either. Who said that?
They were bigger than us. Let's just say
they were bigger than us. They were just better.
Yeah, they're better.
And I feel like in your mind we were like, wow, they're bigger. They're just grown men. But it was like, dude, they just beat us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but then again, you made it that far to play them, so you kind of got to see that.
It was a really good time. We had a solid team.
It was fun. We went to Universal Studios.
After that,
celebrate.
Celebrate the loss. Yeah, celebrate the loss. That was an interesting time because that came, for a year or 2 years, we were raising money, man. We had coin tosses. We were selling hoodies and t-shirts. And
yeah.
I mean, for like a year for everyone to go without basically putting really anything out of pocket. Right. Obviously, your hard work and stuff from doing all these little events.
You kind of raised your own money for your... You funded it yourself.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, we raised so much, in fact, that we even had spending money.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, man, we just had a blast. It was just
cool. That's a good experience, though.
Yeah, it was a bunch of, like, 15, 16, 17 year old kids.
18, 19, 20
year olds. Because we were just having the time of our lives, yeah, you know what I mean? It was cool.
It was a good time.
Yeah. But anyway, so moving right along. Speaking of winning. What does winning mean to you? And I know in previous episodes, we talked about this when we talked about being competitive and things like that. But what does winning mean to you?
You made it.
Right.
Kind of.
You succeeded.
Like, yeah. And every time, I can't get it out of my head, but I literally think of the DJ Khaled song, like, all I do is win, no matter what. And he always talks about... like we're the best or whatever, and he keeps
we the best.
That's like, yeah, we're the best. And DJ Khaled.
DJ Khaled.
Khaled?
That's what Mikey calls him.
He calls him Mike DJ Khaled. Mikey calls him
DJ Khaled. only because he's a barber. So, is it an attitude? Is it like, or is it all part of that? Is it actually overcoming something and beating an opponent? Or defeating competition? Is it an attitude? Is it? Like...
I mean, literally, yeah, it's beating your opponent, or whatever. But I mean, yeah, it can be. No matter if you win or lose, it depends on how you react to it. Is how you quote unquote won the situation.
Yeah, because the reason why I give that whole DJ Khaled thing, I don't even see. I see winning right as that basic level, like okay, yeah, you're winning. But for me, it's really a mentality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you could be your own competition.
Right.
So it's like I just beat myself at that. Well, talked myself right into the gym instead of out like usual. Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Or something like that where it's just a winning mentality. Like, I'm going to go into this meeting and I'm just going to let it rip. Even if it doesn't happen that way, at least we had like that winning mentality. True, like, yeah. I was getting hyped when I was waiting for the story. I'm like, yeah, he crushed it. He said he got asked a question. Like, dang, there that goes. But it's better than being like having the losing mentality. Yeah. I think it's better than
winning. Winning creates a swag. Like, yeah. When you're always winning or when you do win or succeed in something, you feel so much better. You feel like you're like the man right now, right then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Manny did that. Like, but he said that when they gave him that question, he kind of got crushed, but didn't catch an attitude about it or didn't get angry about it. He sat there and he said he took notes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he was like taking in whatever it was and kind of reality checked himself and then went on. He
took that loss like a champ.
Well, there's winning in losing. And I think that's one of those moments where I learned a lot from that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't call that a loss. Yeah.
It's a learning experience. Right. So, and again, it's just how you look at winning and losing. I mean, there are the, you know, you scored more points than me,
right,
winning
right.
and losing. And then there's winning and losing, and that's more of a mentality like you talked about.
Yeah. So, is the opposite the same to you guys? So, what does losing mean to you?
Losing means more to I get more out of losing. I say it doesn't mean more. Yeah. I get more out of losing. Winning is easy. Not winning is easy. It's hard to win, but that feeling of being happy, you know, and the adulation, that's kind of easier to deal with than a crushing defeat or loss.
Yeah.
You know, you get a lot more out of it. You get more motivated. You learn more. You kind of fine tune your craft in whatever it might be, you know, for the next situation. So, you know, losing is never fun, but kind of a necessary evil at the same time.
That was good.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about it all the time. Like, you need winning and losing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You need the contrast in everything. Yeah, you need the ebb and flow. But going to, you know, like the winning, I forget who it was, but it was one of these books where they're referencing winning, going, you know, alluding to the attitude of winning with through losing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Michael Jordan gives this like crazy quote talking about, you know, like I shot missed 1,000 shots or something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. And I succeeded because I lost or something like it ends like that. And if you actually read it on, you know, the surface level, it sounds like the most depressing motivational quote you ever. It's like, wow, that's amazing. But then you keep reading it and you realize how heavy what he just said is. But they go and they talk about having little wins and setting yourself up for success. So there's a difference. Whereas if you have these little tiny little baby wins, that your day or your life can shift and hang at least more onto the W side if you kind of think of like a scale, like a fish scale or something where you're going up or down with the, that wouldn't be a fish scale. What's that called? What kind of scale is that?
Balance scale.
Anyway, the scale of like winning and losing, you could tip it to, I guess, you know, the winning, you know, whatever carries the most weight if you have these little wins. So the more weight you're throwing on there in the W's, it might not be, because sometimes people think of winning of just taking everything, like the war, so to speak.
Yes. Right.
But if you have these like little tiny wins, those are, you know, progressively moving you forward. Yep. Not only that, they're pushing away frustration and adding to a better attitude. And I know that might sound like, what in the world did that just turn into? But that's exactly it. Think about if you got a bunch of little losses back to back to back, and then you got the overall loss.
Yeah.
Right? That's like a boxing match
right.
where you know
right.
you're losing round after round after round, and then you last a 10th round, and then you get TKO'd.
Right.
You're like, dude, there's nothing worse. I mean, just knock me out the first round. Right. You know, this isn't a famous Rocky movie or whatever. But if you have the guys who go all, however many rounds, because different weight classes have different rounds, but let's just say they went all 12 rounds or 10 rounds, whatever it is, and get the win out of what the judges gave them, right? Not out of a knockout or anything. Mm-hmm. That is what I'm talking about. So each round you're winning those little wins, like every punch counts, every block counts, all that stuff. Those little wins will get you the big W at the end. Mm-hmm. That's a better example than a weight. I don't know what the hell that
There's also in that, you know, and I'll open it. It's kind of a question for everybody. You know, how do you take, because I've been posed with this question or situation, how do you take a loss, okay? You know you're going to take this L, but it's because hopefully it's going to net you the win, you know, long term, a big win. So if you're negotiating a deal with, so I have a customer, I have a situation, he wants to return, you know, $5,000 worth of stuff. If I do this now, which is a short term loss for me because I'm losing money, or I'm losing profit, or whatever you want to call it, his attitude is, okay, he worked with me, and hopefully this is going to net me a relationship that lasts 10 years, which is going to be well worth the $5,000.
Yeah, you retained a customer.
You retained a customer. How do you, what's your thought process in doing that? Because it's always the unknown, like, oh man, I hope this works, or are you confident in your ability to say, yeah, you could read the situation?
That, first of all, that takes maturity, and that takes, there's experience. Always the big word that no one wants to hear, but that's risk. Mm-hmm. So there's the risk of letting something go or forcing that man to, mm-hmm. on that first transaction, like, I don't care if you do anything else with me.
Right.
Maybe you do got to get those numbers in. We see this a lot of times with car salesmen. They have mm-hmm. to hit a certain quota, and they're forcing prices on you, and like a lot of people get turned off by that.
Yeah.
And not only did you lose a customer, you lost a forever customer.
Right.
So what do you just let go? Then you have the one guys, you know, we know car salesmen who do this all the time, where they're so nonchalant that it's almost just as frustrating. Like, dude, are you going to actually help me, or do you not care to get a sale? I want someone who's going to answer. So there is that weird balance where you care enough to like, all right, I'm going to take care of this guy this time. Hopefully that, here comes the risk. Hopefully he can see that enough to still do business with me in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Although this transaction did not pan out.
Or potentially like recommends other people.
Right, exactly. And I just think, and the reason why I say maturity is because you're letting go. You're letting something go even though you put work into it. So right. you could have put all this work into making that deal happen initially on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then it's supposed to happen. The deal goes through and then something crumbles along the way and then you have to give back. All that, it's kind of a, on borderline. It's one of those things where they say you slow down to speed up.
Sure.
Because you never know what that can lead up to. He might be in a conversation, or she, whatever, might be in a conversation with someone else at a dinner party or something, or some like, you know, business meetup, where they said, oh, you know, Manny's company, you know, they didn't force a sale on me. They actually, you know, allowed me to return the stuff, and you know, I'm recommending them to everybody. So then that might lead to other. That one sale, let's just say, to keep it in simple terms, $1,000 sale, which you thought you had, was like, yes, that's, you know, that's in the books, was now negative. I don't know how your business ran, what you guys do with all the parts or whatever. To then he has five of his friends come to you with each $1,000 deals. Now you have $5,000.
Right.
The next month,
you lost $1,000 to make five.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I mean, but. That can crumble somebody. Like I said, if someone's under pressure and they have to put up the numbers,
sure.
and the numbers aren't in that, on that scoreboard, and it's the Jim Rohn example that I say all the time, where Jim Rohn says, did you get 100 referrals this month? And it's a little box. And the person says, no, but what happened was my car broke down, but and my bank account and the way it's set up, and blah, blah, blah. And they say, well, the box only fits a yes or no answer. Your answer, the problem is your answer doesn't fit inside this little box here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things. And if you get enough of that pressure, you might collapse.
Right.
You have to trust yourself and trust the process enough and the company and the product or service that you're selling to do something like that. Cause I feel like if you feel that you're losing on all ends. Just think about it. Like, you go in, your wife's ticked off at you, your kid just flunked, you just got a flat tire going into work, and now you just lost this customer. You're not going in too confident, or not as confident as you could anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So to still take all life's anxieties, pains, losses, because people see it as just, that's just that loss. That might have not been your only loss that day, right?
Sure.
You could have said no to something else, or something else could have happened that day. That's what's fascinating to me about stuff like that. And when people do overcome difficulties or whatever.
Yeah. And keeping composure.
If you hear my kid crying, that is my kid crying in the background.
But it's like also keeping composure in terms of like, if you go and do a whole bunch of loss and like how you react and how where your attitude maintains through all that, I guess, whatever you want to call it.
I think that's the mentality of winning, right? Yeah. Keeping that.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, and who's watching? So if you have like a shadow, or if you have one of those little
protege,
that's what I wanted to say. I wanted to say like a shadow or something, a protege who's watching you, who might eventually, let's just say it's your own business, or you know, whatever, someone owns it, and then something like that were to happen, and your son or daughter or whatever, the person who's coming up behind you sees how you handled that, that can be the difference between a business completely collapsing in the future mm-hmm. or a business catapulting even further.
Sure.
Because they say, oh, well, he crumbled, so that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going
to,
you know.
Then you say, okay, it's okay to give up or.
Yeah, I'm just mm-hmm. going to, you know, close up shop, and that's the end of that. So you got to think of on all levels. Again, that's why I said it's a mature process to go through if you process it like that. I don't know. I think it's fascinating. Something's not popping up immediately to my mind when you said that, but I'm sure stuff has happened to me where you had to give
up. A lot of times it's not a conscious thing. You kind of do it because it's, you know what, winning isn't always easy. To do the right thing, like in winning in that situation, it's not always easy to make that decision to say, okay,
right. This was my thing when we were talking about it last week, where I would agree to a certain extent where winning is, you know, when you do have that, cross that finish line and you do win, that is the easy part. But when I'm talking about mentality, it's just as hard because you have to go through a process. So a perfect example is like mentally, I'm telling myself, I don't want to go to the gym this morning. It just happened to me this morning. I'm not going to the gym, dude. You're tired. You don't have to go. Just go after work, which I know I won't go after work. And you can handle that, blah, blah, blah. I overcame that thought process, which is a win, and I landed myself at the gym. So that wasn't easy, though. Honestly, that was like a war going on between my mind. So that winning in that aspect was not easy. That was difficult for me. And that's the hardest thing is the 6 inches between both of your ears. Mm-hmm. It's that mental warfare, I guess, that you have on a daily basis. All right. So, you know, what do you guys think of second and third place?
What was that? Was that from Ricky Bobby? If you ain't first, you're last.
Yeah.
Don't matter what you get, second, third, you're last.
Oh, what is it? What's that saying? Second is your first loser.
First loser.
Yeah. Second place is the first loser.
Second loser. I think that's true, though. That's true. Regardless of
the harsh reality.
Because
you almost got first place, but you weren't quite good enough to.
Yeah. That's even worse. I feel like you almost got first place.
There you go.
Yeah. Again, not to say you're not gonna learn something from that experience, but you're a loser. You technically lost.
You lost.
And that's it. Yeah. You lost.
Yeah.
Give your best shot.
And for whatever reason, sometimes it might have been your best shot. It might have been all you had. All, you didn't do anything wrong.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
I forget
what. That's why they give second place.
But it's just like the ranking system that makes you like, I guess, gives you like a weird view of it.
Well, now that you said that, it does mean something though. Because when we bring into the concept the Olympics,
mm-hmm. yeah.
those medals mean something. That's first, second, and third place.
Right.
They add those bad boys up, total medal count,
so
that actually do count. Whereas in regular, you know, sports on an everyday basis or competitions or whatever the reason why there's such a ranking, don't matter as much. But in the Olympics, it actually does matter.
Well, and when you think about Olympics, too, think about, you know, in its totality, how many athletes are actually competing to get there. So, you know, second and third place out of 1,000.
Right.
You know, well, that's pretty special at the same time.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
Well, you're talking about the world's best.
Yep. Yeah.
At that time. And you know what's crazy?
Yeah.
I thought of this during the Olympics. I said, you know what's fascinating? At that very moment, let's just say it's a 100-meter dash, and whoever smokes whoever, normally someone's getting, you know, whatever, and wins, they're considered the fastest person in the world. But are they? That's what always messes me up. Yeah. It's like, there's probably somebody faster. They might have just got injured 2 weeks ago, and they're not, they weren't unable to compete. So that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know the odds of everything lining up that perfectly, and then you winning it also? So like you said, 1,000 people, I'm sure it's more than that, but let's just say with 1,000, there's 1,000 people. It dwindles down to 100, it dwindles down to 10. Then it's the 3, and then it's like, dude, but imagine all the people who were in that and were just as fast and might be, but got injured or had something else happen.
Well, even think about like obviously in the race and stuff is like that. How often is a quote unquote world record ever broken?
Right.
So you think like even though if you won that one, there's still somebody faster than you. Technically, I mean.
Well, yeah, and in horse racing, this happens where the Triple Crown, or what's the thing when they get three wins back?
Yeah,
the Triple Crown. How hard that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you are competing at that such a high level that it's everyone's so close that anything can happen. That's why it's so hard to get three wins back to back to back, because anything can happen. There's horses that won, then literally got injured, or 1-2, something happened on, you know, they just didn't have it in the third one.
Yeah.
And then when you see one actually do all three, like, you know, the odds of that, that's why it's so special.
Mm-hmm.
Or a hat trick in hockey or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just like, what are the odds? It's so, you know, when you boil the stuff down like that. So I guess second and third place, it has, I guess it's
depending
place.
I guess depending on the magnitude of where, what kind of competition is.
Exactly what the competition is.
Yeah.
Well, listen, put it into perspective. If you come in third place, right, and you worked for 4 years and you broke your stones and did whatever you had to do and worked and grind and lost sleep, had tears, cut yourself, all that, and you got third place, I mean, it's still rewarding. You know, you won.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Even in your mind, you won. No, you might have lost. You might not have been first place, but you won. You know what I mean?
And sometimes, like, some of the things, like, is that sometimes you win in your own mind, the fact that you just finished the competition, whatever it is,
yeah,
it doesn't matter what place you came in. It's just as long as you put yourself hard enough to even just complete whatever you're trying to do.
Oh yeah, well, if we're staying with the Olympics, there's a lot to be proud of.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
And then people take on a lot too, because then you're like, wow, I'm representing my entire country.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, seriously though, when people actually like sit back and think about the weight, the odds, and all that happening, it's like. That's why I watch the Olympics. I half the time I'm just like getting chills down my spine. It's like it's cool. Fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, making a list, like you said, it doesn't matter where the list is. It all depends on what it is. Like for me, I filled out for this one job, and X amount of people made it on. You know, applied for it.
Mm.
I made number 8. Number 8 got me into this place where now I'm on a list where all these other people didn't, you know, get on the thing. So I guess it was like the top 10 or whatever on this list, so I made 8 just because I was closest, like, you know, almost last
part of the cut.
Right, I made part of the cut, so that's like, I'm excited about that I made it. I didn't make it first or second or third, but I made it 8 where I'm on the list, and I'm, you know, I'm excited about that. So it's like, I guess it all depends on what it is, and what it means to you.
I mean, even going down to, you know, this thing that our, you know, Bristol Borough won. There's 14,000 applicants. Somebody got better be good with math.
Yeah, it is.
Is that what it was?
14,000 applicants.
Towns in the United States.
Towns.
Wow. I didn't know it was that many. Yeah.
Just do 14,000. Let's just say there's 50 businesses, which is way more. I know for a fact there's way more. So let's just say there's 50 businesses. 50 times 14,000. So you're talking about 700,000. You're one out of 700. You're one out of a million.
Right.
If you land a deal with these people or whatever, like, again, the odds are so wild that if you actually land this, that's crazy. Dude, that is borderline impossible. One in a million? There's diseases that are more likely than that.
True.
I know that sounds bad, but it's true.
That's true. That's true.
So
that's crazy, though.
If each town had 50 businesses, there's way more than that.
So think about if we didn't win, you know, if the town didn't win, but we were on the finalists. Well, I forget what the finalists was. Five.
Yeah, we made it top five.
So
top five.
So you're top five. Yeah. You don't win the money. You know, are you still happy about that we're top five? Because it doesn't hold the same weight. I mean, this could be, you know, life changing. Or very, you know, very much altering the town's future. For one, you made top five, good for you.
Yeah.
But the significance to win that 500,000 is going to be, you know, astonishing.
Yeah. I mean, look at that number.
0.00001.
You are the top half of the top 1%. Bristol Borough is by what they already just did. The fact that they won. The fractions go even further than that.
That's crazy.
That's just top five.
Yeah,
I think it's like,
it was 20th.
Like 100th of a percent.
What the heck, dude? That is wild.
I'm the math man.
Anyway, the reason why I say that is because even that competition, when everyone's like, "Oh, every vote counts," so you had a the whole. It was this competition where Main Street Small Business Revolution put this contest together, presented by Deluxe. I'm understanding that Deluxe is the people with the money, and mm-hmm. then the people who are showcasing what's being done with the money is the Small Business Revolution. So they try to, you know, interject you know, some financial you know, capital into a small town to give it a facelift and, you know, bring up, you know, its marketing plans and etc. So Bristol Borough, located in Bristol Borough, Pennsylvania, won. But so everyone from the town is basically promoting on social media, telling everyone to vote. So you had, like, you could only vote once a day, but, you know, you could vote on multiple devices. It got crazy. Every vote counted, and you got to think about, they did everything it took to win. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
Like, we were on this computer, this cell phone, that laptop, yeah. James' yeah. tablet, yeah. Kel's phone. Like, anything you could vote on, we're voting on.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And then you got to think, every single one of those counted, because yeah. at one point, a day before results came, or voting was ended, the another town came into first place. Hmm. So then Bristol Borough dropped into second.
Oh, okay.
So you're like, mind yeah. you, I don't know whether that was, you know.
Yeah.
Like, strategy.
Yeah, I think that's marketing. So yeah,
I think I heard about like, the one morning shows I listened to, like, promoting the same thing. Just like, yeah. go in there and yeah, just vote whatever yeah, you
on
can.
The radio, the news.
Yeah. Oh, man, they had Preston and Steve, Fox 29 News. That's exactly what I was talking about, yeah. They had surrounding, like... like fire towns. Stations and oh, yeah. yeah, like police well, stations, all like promoting
everyone, you know, in the state of Pennsylvania. Actually, yeah. was like all like the
governor talked about yeah. it. Yeah,
yeah. Tom Wolf cool. was on there. They had Delaware, New Jersey, parts of New Jersey. Anyway, the ones that are kind of like lit up, the
tri-state area.
Yeah, the tri-state area, basically. Yeah. It was fascinating. It really was. But anyway, we said that all those little wins, if you can yeah. picture all those thousands and tens of thousands of votes. Our little wins, and they got you the yeah. big, you know, the big W, which is, you know, so gratifying. So, so how do you celebrate your wins? You know, we're speaking of wins. We're talking about this competition that Bristol Borough won. And it's, you know, it's a show. Now it's a show at mm-hmm. this point. And now the applicants apply mm-hmm. now to be a part, whoever's part of that strip, those two strips, Ratcliffe and Mill Street. And you have a small business. Now you apply to be a part of this grant that is given. It's $500,000 by Deluxe. And then so it just keeps getting smaller and smaller. But anyway, I just want to say that Bristol Borough won. And the question is, how do you celebrate your wins? Just using this example, Bristol Borough had like a parade and then had, you know, kind of this little celebration mm-hmm. down at, you know, main spot right where those two streets meet down the wharf. Where Delaware River kind of splits New Jersey and Pennsylvania, which is very cool, very beautiful spot. But they took the time to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you are a part of that or not, you can appreciate, or even how big or little the celebration was, you can appreciate that someone recognized enough that this, we need to stop and celebrate the win. That's mm-hmm. a huge yeah. win. Literally, Bristol's are obviously already on the map.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been on the map in year. So this is like reinvigorating the town.
Yeah, and the wind infused a lot of good energy. Mikey and I were down there. It was not. It was a lot of people.
It was a sea of people down there. Yeah,
it was a lot.
And I got there like probably like a half hour, 45 minutes later, but it was still like a sea of people. And it's like me owning a business on that main strip. You see like everyone who participated, everyone who voted, all the support, because it does. Obviously, it helps their own town,
yeah.
but me as a business owner, it's like they're really supporting us as business owners.
Mm-hmm.
They
sure.
want all these stores to come. They just want everyone to get like a boost just to keep it going, just to refurbish our storefront, or even like it goes down to as far as like the internals of a business, yep. like financing, advertising, like all that money goes to stuff like that. There's some people that own businesses. They're only 2 years in, and they're not even sure if they can make it for next year because they're just like in a 0-0 to the year. Yeah, so yeah. this is going to help them go. And then just to see all those like hundreds of people, probably thousands of people that came. Yeah, yeah, it was like definitely thousands and thousands of people that came down to support. It was amazing.
It was fun. It was fun for the people who have been there their whole lives And I was like, man, this was cool. Like it was kind of, and it would turn into a rally almost. You know, yeah. Everybody's raise the bar is what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, I think that's what they call it.
That's kind of I think Bill Pez is the guy who kind of runs that organization, is Raise the Bar. But even then, the businesses were booming. You know, the restaurant across the street had tons of people.
2 hour waits.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that weren't from the town. And if you're looking at it, depending on what perspective you have, even if you don't win this money, right, whatever, I mean, they're giving it to six people. Say you don't win any money from this 500.
Six businesses?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought I was going to divide it more.
No, from 500. So
six
technically,
businesses that they're going to actually divide up into six and do the show on.
On, yeah. Mm. So, wow. But yeah. With that, you know, taken to the big picture, property value goes up. You know, people know about your place. People are going to stop there. Yeah. Whether you win or lose, you win.
And
you
even if the town would have not gotten this, from what I see, it's just been like a high traffic area. Like
sure.
Now it's violent. There's
been people are coming down and see. Oh, let's go see Bristol.
Yeah,
let's go drive
people
down
I
there.
Just see like all weekend long. I just seen people just walking by, people I never would see before, and you could see
got
all
good
kinds.
Weather.
Yeah, that helped. But you see all kinds. So it's definitely drawing traffic to the area. Like,
that's awesome.
Out of curiosity, or I'm this is where I'm from. They come back to the town, or like just support.
Going for to put it in even more perspective for the people who's like, well, that doesn't affect me. That doesn't do anything. You got to break it down to the most minuscule level. I don't know if anyone's seen. Man, there's this fantastic video, I don't know where it's at, but it talks about like good deeds. So like I'm walking down the street and I see Manny, you know, who's like an old man. His shoes are untied and he can't really bend over. So I bend over to tie his shoe.
I'll pay it forward.
Yeah, and then like a person crossing the street. Yeah. Well, no, not even necessarily. Just seeing it, because then that old man can't pay it forward.
Right.
So then there's like a little kid crossing the street and he sees me tying your shoes. He's like, man, I want to do something nice for somebody. Then he's affected by it, and then he helps a lady cross the street or whatever. And it just keeps going like that.
Yeah.
If you could kind of think of it like that. So if there's an influx of business, right, generated. So if you're from the town and you don't even have a business, or you're from the surrounding towns or a visitor for, you know, on whatever level, you got to think, let's just say it's like an apparel company that is going to get part of this or whatever, or, you know, whatever. Let's just say it's an apparel company just for you know, example purposes. So this company gets part of, you know, gets a grant, is one of these six companies. And you're like, all right, well, that doesn't affect me. Well, you got to think now their business is going to boom to a level there where it's serving outside people. So you can come in and all of a sudden, whatever that money that's going towards a business, now they're going to naturally get more customers, because now it's they've attracted themselves, and part of the plan was marketing plan to, you know, tie in with that. Then what happens? If that owner's making more money, he might be able to then open up that ran down business that's next to your grandmom's house that you're embarrassed to look at every time you're there. And all of a sudden he has the money to uplift that, or at least renovate that and sell it. And so it keeps going like that. Or he's able to bring in a product that you could only get outside of Bristol. But because he has the income, he can now provide that in his apparel store and can sell you this high level brand or whatever. So it keeps going. It's the
ripple effect.
Holy smokes. It's the ripple effect. So when you don't realize, yes, directly at front, at face value, you might not see it. But down the road, you're going to say, how do you know he might not have gotten so affected by what was going on? Eventually he puts on his own, you know, grant or fund thing. Like, I remember, you know, now we're talking about paying it forward. All six people who won that come together every year and all put up $5,000 or whatever. Now they have this $30,000 loan or whatever scholarship that all of a sudden your kid gets from high school, from Bristol Borough.
Right.
Oh, but you weren't affected by the initial, you know, all those little votings. All that eventually, you never know when that's going to come back and hit you.
Yeah.
So important. That stuff's huge.
You know what? It is very infectious, though. Everybody seems to have that swagger that Mikey talked about before, that winning kind of is an attitude and all that. The winning has kind of rubbed off on everybody. And, you know, just your head's held up a little higher. You walk a little different. There's definitely a confidence. It's good.
So kind of switching gears. So we're going off this, you know, this is a huge high, but I just think it's funny to kind of change things up real quick. How do you react, or what was your reaction to a time where you felt cheated out of a win? Since we're talking about winning and losing, you thought you were going to win. You probably should have won, but you got cheated out of the win, and now you're a loser. Or you lost. The word loser always cracks. I always want to laugh when I hear someone say, you're a loser. You lost. Has that ever happened to anyone?
Sure. I mean, you're butthurt immediately. just you're upset. You're mad. And you start to blame everybody. But you carry that around a lot worse. I try to turn around and say, what could I have done to change that outcome? How could I have taken it out of said person's hands, or however it came about, the loss came about? How could I have taken it out of their hands so it wouldn't have come down to that specific situation or that call or that whatever, that decision? And that's easier for me personally to swallow. Like, what I could have did that different. If I just did that different, that would have never happened. It's kind of the what if game. But if you just dwell on the fact that somebody cheated you out, it just drives me crazy, because I just hate that person's face. That's what it comes up to.
So every time I think of this, I think of sports in like the 70s and 80s, where so college basketball apparently was like greatly like rigged, because college students apparently were easy to buy because they didn't have an income coming in. Mm-hmm. So anyone who had a lot of money was like, I'll give you 20 grand to throw the game. Meanwhile, they're betting millions. So yeah. That 20 grand is nothing. That sounds, but a 20 grand cash is a lot to an 18, 20 year old kid. So it was easy to do. So when you had like March Madness, it was literally March Madness. It made millionaires. I'm sure it probably still does, but it was on such a crazy extent where you got to think, even the refs were involved. So you got to think, it was like, imagine playing your tail off. And the refs are calling everything against you. You're like, dude, I'm not failing this. Foul. It's like you're like not even near the person or whatever. So imagine the level of frustration that has to be. Or we see this all the time in boxing, where we saw one of our guys, Danny Garcia, never forget. He was clearly beating this guy, right? I mean, it was like the dude like, boom, boom, was all lumped up. Danny Garcia looked like nothing. He was losing every round. We're like, what is going on right now? This is clearly a win. Even the guy who was hosting the show was like, I don't know where they're, you know, the card has to be wrong, blah, blah, blah. In the end, it didn't matter. Danny Garcia knocked him out or something. It was like ninth round. But it went eight frustrating rounds. Yeah. And here he's like, oh, he lost. Danny Garcia lost. I'm like, dude, there's no way. Somebody's not watching this.
Yeah.
But I can only imagine if they ended going, you know, if they ended the whole, you know, match up to 10 rounds or whatever it was, 12 rounds, and he would have lost, you'd be like, the level of frustration that had to have been. It was like, you know, you won, but then you just got kind of cheated out. And,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe the judges did see him lose, but it was like hard to see. The guy clearly was getting beat, but I always think of boxing and basketball when I see
it. How about like those when you say, oh, they deserve that loss because the way they were acting? Like the one, like the, I don't know if it was MMA or what it was a week or two ago, where the guy was like doing a shimmy shimmy every time, like the dude, the one guy like swung and he missed him. He like gave him a shimmy and
then cocky,
like mocking him and getting all cocky. And then all of a sudden, he was winning. The guy that was doing the shimmy was winning, but all of a sudden he did the shimmy and the guy caught him off guard, bam, and knocked him out. I'm like, yeah, you deserve that loss.
Like knocked him out.
Like completely done. He was laid out. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, you shook your way down. But like, it sounds bad, but because of the arrogance level of it, it's like, you know, you don't feel bad.
You always want them to lose.
Yeah, exactly.
Knock him down a peg.
So, do you guys want to comment on that? So we just watched a video of an MMA fighter extra. Being extra.
Well, that goes along with what Heck says. Someone who acts and has that arrogance of him, you deserve a knockout like that. He's like, you deserve to have your peg knocked down super quick like that.
Right. Like, and he has the winning mentality. So you got to, at some level, you're like, well, I mean, he's confident. Well, but then it's like, you know, where's the line?
But you can have confidence without arrogance.
Right, exactly.
Well, he's in his own, like, hometown, too. Yeah, so he has to be, like, have to have that.
Yeah, be extra. Lied
about him.
Huh. Yeah. I think it might have been a little too much.
Didn't have to have that extra,
I don't. Boy, it was saucing.
You know when it's extra, when you rap your own song for your own entrance.
He rapped that's like narcissism at its best, dude. Like, that guy was completely obsessed.
He lasted 9 seconds, which is even greater.
Came with an entourage.
All right. So
he owns a deli.
Going off of that, I don't know what this guy's reaction was to that loss. Do you guys know a sore loser, or are you yourself a sore loser? Have you ever dealt with a sore loser? Yeah. I'm curious to see, you know, his reaction, this MMA fighter's reaction after losing on such a pitiful level. Sore loser.
It's somebody who makes an excuse.
Yeah, most of the time they point the finger.
Yeah, yeah. Or they get angry and then they don't talk to you because they lost. Like, they stay angry at you and just like, that's it.
That has to be the funniest.
A sore loser
one.
Isn't going to admit they failed.
Right. Yeah. Like, oh no, you messed this up for me. What do you mean I messed this up for you? You lost. How did I mess that up? Like,
yeah.
I know a couple of them like that.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference between having that winning mentality versus, okay, the match is over. Yeah. Now you have to accept the results for what they are and humbly taking them in and, you know, properly processing.
Try to learn from it.
Yeah, and actually giving credit to whoever just beat you. Right. Obviously, I can understand, like if you were genuinely cheated out of a win, that's one thing, but we all know the person who's always mad or butthurt when they lose.
Yeah.
There's also a difference between it being like aggressive and wanting to win versus being, you know, aggressive after the loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I remember when I was in high school, seventh grade, I ran the track.
Yeah.
And I was involved in like the baton race.
Yeah.
So our track team was really good. We made it to like the finals and we were one step away from making it to the pen relays.
Yeah.
So that last race, which we lost by like almost a tenth of a second,
yeah,
we blamed it on the anchor man.
Yeah,
like everyone blamed it on him, like it was his fault. Meanwhile, we could have all picked it up. That like it could have been anyone all along the whole track.
Yeah.
Could have picked up the slack.
Yeah, and everyone just blamed it on him. Meanwhile, he probably had the fastest time in his thing, but just because he didn't finish the finish line at the right timing, dude, everyone just blamed him. People weren't like not nuts and stuff, but it was just like. It was his fault in our eyes.
Yeah, of course. they're very hard to deal with. I'll tell you that right now. Especially if it's a teammate of yours.
Yeah.
We had this. I'm sure everyone has dealt with this, but man, that is hard.
Yeah.
That is very hard to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it could hit levels of this obnoxiousness that's so unnecessary. Anyway, moving right along. Let's switch gears again and talk about a topic that has become very hot these days when it comes to sports and kids. So, what are your thoughts on participation trophies? Did you get them when you were in sports?
No.
And why do you think they started handing them out?
Sure. I mean, I know I got them. If you played, you got them. Yeah.
I didn't participate.
In the trophy ceremony or...
At all to get it.
Yeah, because when we had we had our ceremony,
everybody got a trophy. I think it's okay, but there's an age, and that's where it starts to get blurry. Obviously, when you're 4 or 5 playing t-ball, not a big deal, you know. But then you get up to 7 and 8, and you're like, okay, it's starting to get a little more serious. But you know, some parents are like, no, they're still too young.
Yeah.
And then 9 and 10, so that the line of demarcation becomes blurred. When is it? Is it 11 or 12, or is it 2? Because some parents will start at 5, 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, some parents will start at, you know, it's never serious. You know what I mean? Just as long as you tried your best. So I mean, there's definitely it's blurry. Now that I'm in it, you know, there was a father who wanted to, you know, teach the kids about winning and losing at like 6 and 7. And some of the parents didn't take kindly to that.
Yeah.
You know, but we're at a point now where I don't know. I still don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's
weird. What do you think would, I mean, I guess depends on their age level, like their maturity level.
That has a
because lot some kids, all right, so you have 2 8-year-olds, 2 boys that, you know, play baseball, and one doesn't care if he gets participation, and then the other one does. And he starts crying about it, complaining about it, like, oh, I should have got to participate. Like, we should have got all awards for participating. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it kind of, like you're saying, it's kind of grayed out. Like, what do you do? Like, when do you cut that off? You don't want to upset anyone, but, I mean, the kids also have to learn how to take a loss and understand that winning is winning, losing is losing. And
the level of PC is too much, though. The political correctness is too much sometimes.
Or being overprotective.
Like Manny said, sometimes it's like the parents, they get too involved and like they want their kids to all win.
Yeah, or always win. Like, listen, it's never going to happen. Your kid's going to lose at some point.
Yeah, I feel like at one point you're building confidence for your kid that, you know, you're a winner no matter what. And then at the other point, if you continue to do that, you're setting your kid up for failure because he's not always going to win or she's not always going to win.
And that's what they need to understand. So then,
not even that. They need to know how to deal with that.
Yeah.
Because in life, you're not always going to actually win.
Yeah.
You're going to take your L's. This entire podcast has been about that, you know, winning and losing. So I don't know the answer of to what age, but there definitely has to be the parents, if they're an involved parent, not even if, just some whoever, you know, is the guardian of this child or your children, whatever. You should know the gauge. Yeah. I feel you should know the gauge, and you get, that could be a discussion on the ride home. Like, I know you got the participation trophy, but you do know, or how's the organization, you know, like presenting it? Is there more weight? At least, yeah, you got a participation trophy, but they won.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know, because different leagues have different things. Like, they're the champions, but you got a participation trophy. Right. And then there's places
bigger and smaller.
Yeah, there's places that everyone gets the same size trophy.
Yeah.
The
interesting thing is you talk about the maturity level. Like, what's the maturity level of the parent?
Exactly.
How do they handle winning and losing? Because it's, you know, you kind of instinctually kids do what their parents do. So if you're not in the right frame of mind, if you're not mature as a parent, you might be rubbing something off on a kid that you probably not real happy about.
Yeah, cause I think it was one of our, I forget which one, I guess, said like if the parent's more emotionally involved than the child, then there's a problem there because you're more trying to live vicariously through that.
Evan. Yeah, exactly. But that's even beyond sports.
Yeah.
Parents in general, I would assume you're trying to do your best.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you're always going to be, that carries you're not always going to be right. Along with that is kind of what you're saying, when do you know? I don't know. I don't know. It's situational. Then you got to say, well, the parent themselves don't even know the borderline. You know what I mean? Sure. Everything's a participation for them, or everything's just winning, or they're coming down too hard on their kid. You're a loser. You stink. You know, think about it. And the kid's five. And we don't know. For us, we're like, oh, that's too young. But who's to say?
Yeah, right.
Or it's too old. At 17, they should never have gotten a loser badge. I'm not sure. But I do know that there's people who also, it's beyond sports, where it's the same thing with like political views.
Yeah.
And people just put all this stuff on a kid, and the kid's just like, he didn't even get to develop his own thought opinion. Process, yeah, thought process. Where like, you're trying to like guide them, not dictate them. Yeah. And I think that's the difference. Whereas like, you're doing your child, I think, a disservice if all they think they're going to do in life is winning.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, when they're little, you're trying to build them up. And it's like, oh, dude, you stink. The kid's like three. You know what I mean? Of course it's situational because you have different mentalities that you're working with. There might be a 12-year-old that's super immature compared to an 8-year-old who can take it.
Right.
Have you ever seen there's these little karate kids that are they're so disciplined and have everything going. Like, how in the world this kid has all this going for him? They're only 10 or something like that or something wild. Obviously, you have a different talk with that kid.
Yeah.
Whereas compared to the other kid who's just playing Pokemon Go or stuff.
Right.
Jeez. So the answer is we don't know. Or do we know when we discuss winning versus losing to our kids? No. Just wait till the situation pops up?
When the situation pops up. Yeah. When your kid asks you, why did we get this? Because we didn't win. Because my kid knows at 8. He knew at 7. He's like, why are we getting this? We lost. This team was in first place. And then you go into the, oh, well, it's because, and you give him the explanation.
So what would you do if a parent, you know, this happened in the NFL, one of the NFL, you know,
James
players.
James Harrison. Yeah.
He gave back his kid's participation trophy. He said he didn't want it for his kid. So what do you do? Like, what if you're like the organizer of
gave
this?
It back?
Yeah, he said, like, don't give my kid a participation trophy.
He didn't win.
Yeah. There you go. That's that.
Yeah.
I settled that.
Well, I mean, that's the lesson he's teaching his kid, I guess.
All you can do is just look at it.
Absolutely. And I think it's to me, I think it's fantastic for discussion for the rest of the parents to think about. Maybe that's because, hey, he's raising his kids one way.
Yeah.
Again, that's we're focusing just on sports. Sure. You don't know what he's doing behind doors. He's probably teaching his kid discipline on all levels. Yeah, and you're like, man, maybe I should model this guy, actually.
Right.
But, you know, maybe that it was a little distasteful to some people. It might have been the wrong time to do it and not do it in front of other people. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, you could agree or not agree on. But
there's no right answer to that.
Yeah. So what do you do if the opposite happens? Like if a parent or someone comes up to you and is like, where's my kid's participation trophy?
We don't have any.
But how do you explain that to a parent who's asking for one? How would you anyway? I don't know if this ever happened.
If you don't have it, you just say, we don't do that. We don't encourage that. We don't have any of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know.
But you're encouraging, but it's weird because you are encouraging participation. You do want all your kids.
Yeah.
But you're not, your reward is what you get out of it as being a teammate and, you know, what you got out of this. Is
I know we give out, like, what was it for? So I coached fall ball last fall, and we gave medals to all the girls.
Yeah.
Like for participating.
Right.
We started out with 10 girls. We ended up with 4 by the end of the season.
Yeah. So they each got 2.
So we gave them 2 each. So
not turned into 2 chains.
It turned, so we had T-ball and we didn't have a trophy ceremony like we had when we were younger.
Yeah.
You know, my kid didn't. But the coach on his own volition decided to go just get some trophies made. The joy that they had was unbelievable. Yeah. They were like, oh my God, we won. They were like, we're winners. They're freaking out. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, and
it made a big difference. At least it was an impact at that time.
But it's T-ball. They're 5 years old, right. Four or 5 years old.
Right.
So that's awesome to see them with that joy. You see a 10-year-old and he's expecting a participation award. Go get a cup.
Yeah, so I guess it is situational, and it's tough. You don't, sometimes those situations pop up, you're not even expecting that. He's like, wait a minute, you've been a part of this league for 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, we never did this. And you know, and they do it, so it's interesting. So winning versus losing, good stuff, guys. So we're gonna wrap this up with the final segment. If given the opportunity, what do you say to an Olympian who trained and waited 4 years to accomplish their goal after they did not place?
Oh man, did you leave it all out there? Did you try? It sounds cliche and it sounds kind of,
give it your all.
Yeah. Did you leave it all out there? You can't be mad at that.
Yeah.
If you gave up 4 years and you came up empty, can you look back and say, I did everything I could and I just, he or she was better than me.
Yeah. I think it's what we go back to all the time is it's the goal is to, yes, achieve that, but the real thing about the situation is the person you become during the process.
Sure.
So who have you developed as in yourself along that way? Along those 4 years, think about what you became. You became an Olympian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You already are the top, you know, elite. And that's just to grab whatever scraps of winnings you can.
Yeah.
When you don't actually place, I guess.
Right.
Because obviously if you place, you're like, I knew, I seen this. I made it happen. I had the vision. Maybe it just wasn't that time. Mm. But yeah, I think it's the process. Think about the person that you did become along the way. Because there are people who've gotten recognized for how they took a loss, which sounds very strange. I think it was in tennis or something where a ball was out. And the ref said it was in. And the guy who was against said it was out. Imagine that. And he lost the match. And he got all this news press. Like, incredible amounts of news. The guy who won didn't even get that much. I mean, he got it because he moved on the next round and ended up losing anyway. But
I mean, that's an anomaly.
But then, you don't want to win something that you know.
And that's what he was saying. He's like, I wanted to win knowing I won pound for pound.
You want to win legitimately, not because of a false call.
Yeah. And then that just
to
enter the minds of
to do that to yourself, take a loss. That's true athleticism.
Yeah.
That's maturity. That's what we keep going back to. That's maturity saying, okay. He beat me.
I think you mean sportsmanship.
Sportsmanship.
Athleticism is like your
the actual skill of it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's
it. But and on the reverse too, you want to know you won legitimately, not because
It was just given to you or whatever. Or you know, and now you know if that dude won, in the back of his mind, he's like, dude, that was out. You know, but some people, like, I don't care. That's part of it. The ref missed it.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the ref is the one doing the calls.
That's part of the game.
Exactly.
Maturity.
So, winning versus losing, guys. There you have it. Let's wrap the episode up with two quotes. I had to bust out Vince Lombardi two quotes. Mike, look behind you. There should be a Vince Lombardi book. I always forget the name.
Right there.
Behind you is Vince Lombardi.
No. What it takes to be number one. All right.
So Vince Lombardi, What It Takes to Be Number One was actually written by Vince Lombardi, and it says junior, but he's actually not a junior. And it talks about, you know, the lessons of Vince Lombardi, arguably now not so much because of Bill Belichick, but NFL's, you know, best pound for pound coach, and now that's in question. But anyway, the book is extremely dense, by the way.
It's a tough read.
It is a tough read. But because it's quote after quote after quote is what it is. So it's like it's almost like reading a dictionary. So but the value is crazy. So I just grabbed two quotes from, you know, Vince Lombardi. First one is, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. Second one is, winning is a habit. Unfortunately, so is losing. I love that. Mm-hmm. And then the last quote by Billie Jean King, a champion is afraid of losing. Everyone else is afraid of winning. Straight up facts right there. And
boom.
Winning versus losing. In this episode, we discuss the key differences between winning and losing. We talk about what second place means, participation trophies, how we celebrate our wins, how we process our losses, and our advice to someone not accomplishing a long-term goal. We wrap the episode up with quotes from Billie Jean King and Vince Lombardi. Thanks again for joining us. Guys, don't forget to visit the website, JimmyLeeVelez.com. Follow the blog. If you have any inquiries or questions you would like for us to answer on a future episode, just email us at info@JimmyLeeVelez.com. And on behalf of myself and the rest of the crew, we wish you massive success. And until next time, adios.
The Rotated Views podcast was produced for self-development purposes. Thank you for the love and support. We truly do hope you enjoyed the views.